Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the three principles. And I will take calls later in the show, probably. So if you want to get in, numbers call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And just hang on. If you do call in, hang on. You'll be able to listen to the show once you've called in. And I'm gonna try and get to calls, but I do want to kind of talk about the three principles because they're kind of at the heart of everything that I talk about each week on the show. Couple of things to let you know about. So, Caffeine for the Soul podcast is consistently popping into the top 10 self-help podcasts in the UK and the top where we're kind of, we go in and out. We flirt with we're in the top 100 in the US on iTunes. And you can find the podcast either by typing in Caffeine for the Soul on iTunes podcasts, or you can go to michaelneal.org, click on Caffeine for the Soul, and you'll see links for the podcast. This week's podcast has been all about success and what it takes to succeed. It's if you haven't listened, each episode's about 5 to 10 minutes, occasionally a little less than five, never more than 10. And they come out each day. And next week, sneak preview of coming attractions, is going to be an interview I did with Anita Morjani. And we've chopped the interview up into five kind of bite-sized, espresso-sized chunks, and you'll be able to listen to it then. The other thing we got coming up in Los Angeles, but also you can join us online, is the Productivity Weekend, which I'm doing with my friend and mentor, Dr. George Pransky. And I'm going to read you my own sales page. Is that weird? I don't know. Productivity is not a measure of how busy you are, or even how many things you can cross off your to-do list at the end of the day. It's a way of evaluating the ratio of results to effort, how much bang to the buck you're getting for each and every action that you take. That's why increasing personal productivity isn't just about getting off your butt and trying harder. It's the natural result of waking up from a pervasive misunderstanding about how the mind works and waking up to a deeper potential for how gracefully and effectively you can do your work in the world. So I'm going to be talking today about the principles behind productivity and behind kind of everything in life. And over those 2 days, George and I are going to be really focusing on how understanding these principles allows you to be more productive, not just in the sense of getting more done and not just in the sense of producing more of the results you'd like to produce in your life, but how to find a better ratio between activity and results. So you're getting more from everything that you do and you're struggling less along the way. So if you want to learn about that, michaelneal.org/productivity. We'd love to see you live in Santa Monica, but you can also join us. We've got dozens of people so far joining us live streaming from around the world. And you can book that at michaelneal.org/productivity. So here's the deal. 9 years ago, 2007, I came across this field of spiritual psychology that at the time was called psychology of mind. And it had also been called in the sort of social work field, health realization, which I came to understand was that people were being led to realize their innate mental health, their innate well-being, and that became real to them. And one of the most striking health realizations I had as I was sort of first beginning to look in this direction was I went to see a psychiatrist named Dr. Bill Pettit, who'll be speaking in LA as part of the 3PGC conference. You can go to 3PGC.org to learn more about the conference coming up towards the end of the month. But I went to see Dr. Pettit speak to a group of psychiatrists and psychologists about working with post-traumatic stress disorder and some of the work that he'd been doing with veterans. And I went with my notebook and my like cub reporter hat, like I was Jimmy Olsen in the Superman comics. I was like, I wanted to, you know, jot down in my spiral bound notebook the secrets of working with post-traumatic stress. And within 5 minutes, I put my notebook down. And I put my notebook down because I realized this guy was so sure that everybody was sane that you would go nuts trying to convince him that you were nuts. Like, he so realized the mental health in people. It was so real to him. He saw it so clearly that things that other people would freak out about to him were... Actually, there was a nice... I did an interview with Dana Liesgang, which you'll be able to hear as part of the Hay House World Summit next year. She wrote a wonderful book called Falling Up about sort of her horrific traumatic experiences as a soldier, but how she kind of came out the other side stronger than before. And at one point she was talking about PTSD, and I just jokingly said, you know, Dana, you talk about PTSD the way other people talk about spilling coffee on their shirt when they're driving. Like it's just this annoying thing that happens from time to time. And it was because that's how it looked to her. She saw her innate health. And yeah, from time to time, it got covered over by some really unpleasant thinking about the past. And that's what I saw watching Dr. Pettit work. And so I was fascinated by this field, and I was intrigued, but I was intrigued like an anthropologist is intrigued. I was intrigued in the way, yes, this will be very helpful with other people, right? I didn't so much see how it would be helpful for me. I figured it probably would. But I was interested in it more from a coaching and therapeutic kind of point of view. Well, I went out in February of 2008 to study with Dr. George Pransky, Dr. Keith Blevins. George is now my friend who we're going to be doing the Productivity Weekend together. And Keith is also somebody I bring in on Super Coach Academy every year. He's a wonderful teacher. And they said, well, look, let us teach you the principles behind the work that we do. And in fact, the field has become known now as the three principles. So if you type the three principles into Google, you will see my stuff. You'll see dozens of the 3PGC. You'll just see a ton of stuff. Well, in 2008, there was nothing. It was one website that I could find. And these three principles, I found out, were three fundamental elements that make up our reality. Now, I kind of didn't understand why they were calling them the three principles, because in my mind, a principle was like as above, so below. What you put out comes back. You catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. Something like, you know, it was a pithy saying, a pithy encapsulation of common sense and wisdom. But the way they were talking about principles were fundamental truths about life that existed irrespective of anything to do with you. So you had no influence over a principle. You can notice it or not notice it. But you know how a lot of things in life are responsive to our beliefs? Like if we believe, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Like, you know, your own beliefs play a factor in how you experience life. Well, that's true at the level of the created, at the level of thought, at the level of form. Principles exist before form. They're impersonal. They're like, I sometimes use gravity, electricity, and magnetism as an analogy for the three principles. Like, gravity, electricity, and magnetism are not subject to your belief system. They were here before you. They will be here after you. They affect so much of your experience of life, but we tend not to notice them because they've been there since we were born. So it's like, you know, how unimportant does water seem to a fish because the fish is swimming in it? How unimportant is oxygen to us most of the time because we're living in oxygen, so we don't even think about it. Well, in the same way, these three principles of how the mind works, behind the inside out understanding, behind productivity, creativity, they are so fundamental that we tend not to notice them. But here's the thing. When you understand them at a deeper level, you can navigate life with more grace in the same way as when you understand, say, the principles of aerodynamics about gravity and thrust and lift and drag. You can make the seemingly impossible possible. You can make something heavier than air fly through the air because you understand the principles behind it. And it looks like magic if you if you imagine a 19th century person watching an airplane, it probably looks like demons and gods. But to us, we just go, yeah, of course you can fly, because we understand the principles behind it. So these particular principles came from a guy named Sid Banks. He was the one who uncovered them, discovered them, articulated them. He was, you'll find them in every spiritual tradition. So it's not like he discovered them as if they weren't there before him. But essentially, Sid was a Scottish welder living in Canada, and he had a spontaneous enlightenment experience. He was not a religious man. He was not a spiritual man. It just happened. You know, it's like one of these like random lightning strikes. And what he saw was two things. And the first thing he saw was that our experience of life is an experience of thought reflected in consciousness. And the way he saw it, so the story goes, and I have no reason to disbelieve it, because it's only about 30 years, 40 years ago that this happened. He died a couple of years back now. But, you know, I don't think there's time for the stories to have gotten too distorted. But he was essentially, he was on a retreat, a relationship retreat with his wife. And he was having a horrible time, and they, in fact, wound up leaving early. But he was talking to a psychologist who was there on the program, and they were kind of comparing notes about how insecure they were. And at one point, the psychologist said to him, "You're not insecure, Sid. You just think you are." And that struck Sid so at the core of his being that he turned around to the psychologist and said, do you know what you just said? And the psychologist said, "Of course I know what I just said. I'm a psychologist." But Sid knew that he didn't, because it hadn't struck the psychologist the way it struck him. And he says he didn't sleep for 3 days and three nights, because he realized that his entire life was made up of thought. And towards the end of that time, he was with his wife and his mother-in-law, and they noticed something was up with Sid, because, you know, he's a very ordinary guy, ninth grade education, not somebody prone to talking spiritual philosophy in any way, shape, or form. And he said he looked out a picture window. He looked out the window outside, where they were on Salt Spring Island. And he had a spiritual enlightenment experience. He had an absolute experience of the infinite. And in his own words, he said, "I turned around, looked out the picture window at the ocean, and it was like being sucked down a tunnel. All of a sudden I was buzzing, and there was white light all around me, just buzzing, buzzing. And I was in the middle of this light. Nobody could see it, just me. And it was like I was captured in this white light. And it was just buzz, buzz, buzz. Right there and then, I realized the true meaning of God. I started to cry. I turned around to my wife, Barb, and I said, 'I'm home. I'm free. I've made it. I've conquered this world.' This means to say that you and I will be traveling all over the world. We're going to change psychology and psychiatry so millions of people will be healed." Well, his wife thought he was nuts, but she could tell that something had happened. And soon she kind of got caught up in the feeling of it, because there was an incredible sense of peace and knowing that came with that realization of our true nature, of our innate spirit. And over time, as Sid looked for ways to try and convey what it is that he saw, he began speaking in terms of three principles, three fundamental truths about life that make up our reality. And the first one is that we're alive. And we call this in the three principles world, the principle of mind, of universal mind, of divine mind, that there is a life force that we are a part of, without which none of us would be here. And that that life force has an intelligence to it. And what I mean by that is, if you see that life force in a living tree, it somehow knows how to make the leaves green. It knows in a flower how to orient it towards the light so that it can create, oh, chlorophyll, I think it is, if I'm remembering my sixth grade biology, earth science class. It lines animals up at watering holes in the jungle so they actually drink in order. And that same intelligent living energy is the essence of who we are. And we've all had experiences of feeling more alive, of coming alive. And we love those experiences. We crave them. In fact, the mythologist Joseph Campbell said, I don't think people are really looking to find the meaning of life. They're looking for the experience of being alive. They're looking for that experience of that fundamental electricity of life. And the fact is that when we pay attention to it, when we get present to it, we feel it more. It feels almost like there's more of this life force coming through us, of this mana, of this prana, of this chi. It's talked about in all different traditions, but it is a living, intelligent energy. And it's the basis of life itself. And that's the principle, the fundamental element of mind. And the second fundamental truth that Sid articulated was that we're conscious. And appropriately enough, we call that one the principle of consciousness, that we are awake. Now, we're more or less awake in any given moment, but one of our fundamental human capacities is to be awake to life, to be awake to the fact that we're alive. You could also say to be aware, but for me, somehow awake and conscious speaks to it a little bit more, because that's the bit that we don't know if rocks have, if other animals even have, but we know that human beings have the capacity not only to experience life, but to know that experience, to know that we're experiencing it. And that's consciousness. And then the third fundamental principle, basic building block of the human experience, is that we think. In fact, as I was saying earlier, we live in a world of thought. And that those three principles together, we're alive, we're conscious, we think. We're alive, we are awake, and we think. That creates our experience of reality, of life, moment by moment by moment. And when you start to see that everything breaks down to that, any experience you have ever had, you were able to have because you were alive. You couldn't have had it if you weren't alive, if there wasn't a mind energy coming through you. You had it because you were conscious, you were awake, because if you weren't conscious, you didn't have the experience. And conscious doesn't necessarily mean conscious like awake in the physical sense, because we know that when somebody's in a coma, when they come out of the coma, if they come out of the coma, they have memories of what happened while they were in the coma in the room. So consciousness goes way beyond the physical body, way beyond the bit that's obvious, like we know when somebody's awake or asleep physically. And we think, we live in a world of thought. But because we live in a world of thought, we don't notice it most of the time. We might notice the odd thought, right? I always find the stats interesting how they get them, but, you know, 60 to 90,000 thoughts throughout the day. That's the leading estimate. The lowest number I've ever seen was 30,000. Well, I don't even know how many thoughts per minute that is. Maybe somebody can do the math and put it on Facebook, facebook.com/MNeil. You can put it on the little show announcement. I'd be curious if somebody feels like doing the math. But one of the things about that is it's like, oh my God, I have so many thoughts going on all the time. If I'm noticing my thinking, I'm noticing a tiny, tiny fraction of my thinking. And so that's the problem. That's the limitation of changing your thinking, of conscious affirmation. It's not that it doesn't feel good. It's not that it can't do good. It's that you're playing with such a tiny part of the puzzle. It's not this thought or that thought. It's the fact that we think. It's not what we think about stuff, about life. It's that we actually create what we think about. In that sense, the mind is less of a camera and more like a paintbrush. And so as you start to see that, you see, oh my God, all that is ever going on is life is catalyzing my thoughts and making them seem real to me in consciousness. The film of thought is being projected by the mind onto the screen of consciousness, and I'm experiencing it in my senses as if it's really happening. But one of the reasons that we enjoy scary movies and sad movies and adventure movies is because we know they're movies. We know they're not affecting us at a deeper level. They're affecting us at the level of our humanity, at the level of our emotions. And so it's kind of fun. Well, thoughts the same. Our essential nature, the God within, our spiritual self, our essential self, is untouched by any thought you've had in your entire life, by any experience you've had. That's why Dr. Pettit could look at these people suffering from PTSD, these people with schizophrenia, these people with every mental illness you can think of, and see their health. Because he could see that their essential nature, their essential spiritual nature, was unharmed and unscathed by their life experience and thought experience to that moment in time. I sometimes think of it, consciousness, our mind, our true nature, as being like a mirror. Right? It doesn't matter if the mirror is reflecting Hitler or Gandhi, if the mirror is reflecting God or the devil, if the mirror is reflecting Trump or Clinton. The mirror is unaffected. And our true self, our true identity, our big mind, our essential nature, is completely untouched by every experience we've had. We are pure consciousness, but our experience of ourselves is distorted by thought. Our experience of ourselves is created by thought in the moment, moment by moment. But thought can change. In fact, thought can change in a heartbeat. Thought can change in less than a heartbeat. It's a transient energy. It has no permanence. The length of a thought is the length of the experience that that thought creates. And every thought creates a feeling, because in that way, that like a feeling is the shadow of the thought. Because we're experiencing it on the movie screen of consciousness. We're experiencing it. We're awake to it. And the thing is that we can not only be awake to the experience itself, we can be awake to that which creates the experience. And that's the spiritual journey. That's spiritual awakening. We wake up to the fact of thought. We wake up to the thought-created nature of our experience. And at some point, we begin to wake up from that dream. We begin to wake up from the dream of thought. So first we wake up to it. Then we wake up from it. And each moment that we wake up from it, and enlightenment is just a way of saying sort of a permanent awakening, each moment that we wake up from it, each mini satori, each mini enlightenment experience we have, we experience more of the purity of consciousness, the purity of mind, uncontaminated, as Sid Banks used to say, by our personal thinking. So that's one way to talk about it. Here's another way that I notice when I try to describe it to people has been coming up lately. And I want to be really clear. What I'm pointing to is real. The language I'm using to point to it is just language. So there aren't really, in my mind, three things called mind and consciousness and thought that you can move around like pieces of a puzzle. It's just that sometimes by talking about it that way, it seems to be easier for us to sense them. But if you think about it this way, right? Think about this energy of life. Like, are you aware in this moment that you're alive, that there is a life force moving through you, that there is an electricity inside your body? Are you aware of life around you, that the world around you is alive? Well, that's the universal mind. That's what we're describing when we use the phrase the universal mind. Can you see that you're somehow, the sounds I'm making with my mouth are creating an experience in you? Well, that capacity for that translation to happening, for my mouth to be heard through your ear and turned into form in your brain, that's consciousness. It's like the special effects department that brings the script of thought to life and makes it seem real. And are you aware that you're continually thinking and feeling? That's thought in action. And sometimes people go, oh, are you telling me that my problems are just thought? Well, this is the most powerful energy in the universe, the most powerful creative force in the entire universe. So to say, well, it's just thought, is like saying, well, it's just nuclear energy. Actually, thought not only makes mountains out of molehills, it makes hell out of heaven. And when you're in hell, and when you're stuck on the mountain, it doesn't feel like just thought, in the same way as I'm sure anyone who witnessed or even watched movies of Hiroshima didn't think, well, it's just a nuclear bomb. But in the same way as nuclear energy, actually, it's also the most powerful energy for good when we learn to harness it safely. And this creative force of thought is the very basis of our imagination. It's the basis of creation. It's the basis of invention. It's the basis of what makes life fun. So it's not, you know, there's an expression, there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so, from Hamlet. Well, there's nothing but thinking makes it so. And then we have an opinion about what we created. So here's a different way. Here's I mentioned that there's a way that I've been talking about this lately that I kind of think is kind of cool. And if you want to get in, I will take some calls in about 5 minutes. So numbers to call, 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., dial the country code followed by 760-918-4300. Physicists have been saying since the time of Niels Bohr in the 1920s that there is one energy that is pervasive in nature. All nature comes of this one energy. Einstein did a formula you've probably heard. E equals mc squared. Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. Energy and matter are the same thing, at different speeds, vibrating at different speeds. Now, there's a great Sid Banks story that, you know, he got to go on all sorts of extraordinary adventures for a guy who had a grade 9 education and was essentially a welder for the first 40 years of his life. And at one point he found himself working with some of the top physicists in the United States Navy. And he was giving them a talk about what he saw about the principles behind creation. And they were, you know, that's the great thing about, you know, there are certain professions that are just bottom line. Business, sports, the military, they only care what works. They don't care how weird it sounds. Well, Sid was talking to these physicists, and in the middle of the conversation, he said, you know, I've always thought Einstein was wrong. He wasn't, you know, there's no arrogance to it. He was just talking. And the physicist apparently laughed and said, well, show us what you mean, Sid. And he went up and he wrote up on the board, E equals MC to the infinite. And the physicists were stunned because they recognized, well, that's true. It's an infinite energy. And if the energy is infinite, the potential has to be infinite in form as well. And so imagine this one infinite energy, and it has three aspects, three attributes that, depending on which way we view it, we see it in one of those three ways. In the same way as physicists have noticed the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, the observer effect, that if you're looking at photons in one point of view, you'll see them as waves, and in another, you'll see them as particles. Well, in the same way, this one energy, when viewed in terms of its intelligence, when viewed in terms of its self-determination, that it somehow, life begets life. One of my favorite quotes is from the actress Sarah Bernhardt from the 19th century. And she said, life begets life. Energy begets energy. It is by spending oneself that one becomes rich. And there's an intelligence to this life. Acorns always become oak trees, right? When there's too much moisture in the atmosphere, clouds form. And when there's too much moisture in the cloud, it rains. And that rain winds up causing the grass to grow, and that grass balances the atmosphere. There's an incredible balance and ecology to the natural world. But there's also an ecology of mind. There's an incredible balance within our own physical system, both in terms of our health, but also our psychological well-being, our psychological functioning. And when we get out of the way, this intelligence that I'm calling mind, the big mind, it guides us. It directs us. It points us towards the light. It's like an inner GPS. And we just know what to do. We know what we need when we need it. You know, Santa knows when you've been sleeping. He knows when you're awake. Well, universal mind knows when you need rest and knows when you need to go get off your butt and do stuff. Like, it just guides us, but we don't trust it, right? We think we need to be in charge, and we think we're not up for the job. And the truth is, we're not up for the job. But fortunately, it's not our job. You know, Gabby Bernstein's just come out with a new book called The Universe Has Your Back. Well, mind has your back. This intelligence has your back. And it's not a separate energy. It's just the oneness of life as viewed as a living intelligence, as a guiding system. And this is helpful at every level of life. One is because it takes you off the hook for all the things you think you've got to, like, you probably don't stay up at night worrying about how are you going to keep the earth spinning. I hope you don't. But you probably wake up at night worrying about how you're going to keep your business going, how you're going to keep your marriage going, how you're going to keep yourself going. The same intelligence that spins the planets will create your life if you let it. And that's mind. Well, when we look at this energy, another property of this energy is not only is it intelligent, but it's self-aware. It is awake to itself. It can know itself at deeper and deeper levels. And when we look at this energy through that lens, we see it as consciousness. And you can think of consciousness, one of the metaphors that Sid used that I kind of extrapolated on in the Inside Out Revolution is the glass elevator. That at different levels of consciousness, at different levels of understanding, the world looks like a very different place. And if you're on the bottom floor and somebody describes the view from the top floor, it sounds fantastical. What? You can see and the people are tiny and there are cars and there are forests and there are oceans? That's crazy. I'm looking right now and all I see is a street and a bunch full of people and ladies' lingerie, right? Well, if you go above the third floor, if you go to the fifth floor, the tenth floor, as you go up the elevator of consciousness, you live in the same world, but it looks completely different because you're seeing it from a different vantage point. And that capacity to go up in consciousness, to expand in consciousness. I sometimes use the analogy of bandwidth. That when we have too much thinking going on in our head, it literally shrinks our capacity. And temporarily, we just have a very limited bandwidth. So there's only so much we can see, and there's only so much creativity we have. And as that thinking passes through quicker and quicker, our bandwidth expands, our consciousness rises, and we're able to think and see and create at a deeper level. And this energy is creative. And when we look at it as a creative energy, we call it thought. And the physicist David Bohm said, thought creates our world, and then said, I didn't do it. So we think we have thinking about things. We have thinking about death. We have thinking about money. We have thinking about relationships. We have thinking about ourselves. We don't see that we think death into being. We think business into being. We think success into being. We think things into being and then have thoughts about what we have thought into being. And so changing your thinking at the level of your opinion about stuff doesn't really change the world. But seeing that the stuff itself is made of thought does. Because as soon as you see that something is made of thought, thought can change. It can change in a heartbeat. It's like an iceberg. I was doing an interview for a show for entrepreneurs earlier, and we talked about this in terms of icebergs, that icebergs look solid and the water that they are in looks liquid, but it's the same stuff in a different form. Even the air around it is made of the same stuff in a different form, right? That's the nature of water. It can go from gas to liquid to solid. Well, in the physical world, it takes a little bit of time for those changes to happen. In the metaphysical world, in the world of the mind, it can happen in an instant. Which is why Sid used to say, you're never more than one thought away from a whole new experience of being alive. So I'm going to let's just give that a little bit of time to settle, and let me go to the phones. Let's go out to Clarksburg, Maryland, and talk to Marianne. Marianne, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
I'm taking you off speakerphone.
Excellent choice.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I can. Is it Marianne or Marion?
Marion. Thank you
Marianne.
For asking.
Okay. There you go.
First of all, I'd like to say how very much I appreciate your work and the nuance and precision that you bring to your language, which for me really enlivens all your discussions.
Thank you.
To paraphrase your friend, I am stymied because I think I'm stymied. And I'm kind of half laughing but it's something I've grappled with for a very long time. And with the death of my brother, I feel very strongly it's time for me to go beyond being stymied. So I don't feel that I am actualizing what I'm here to do. I have such a broad, rich life. I have a lot of challenges, health-related. I'm alive years beyond, you know, the initial year and a half to 3 years I was told in 91. I work with the principles that you talk about. I see them work in my life. I'm able to convey them in ways that are meaningful to other people in my life. I seem to have a capacity for energy healing, and I don't want to put myself out there, even though I care very much about contributing.
And so, Marin, I just want to interrupt because I want to play back to you what I just heard you tell me.
Yes. Okay.
I just heard you say, I am living an absolutely amazing, extraordinary, blessed, defiant to medical opinion life, but my problem is I'm not living an amazing, wonderful life.
Oh, yes. You got it.
Right. So wouldn't it wait. So like one of my one-liners, I don't have a lot of one-liners, but one of my one-liners is, wouldn't it be a shame to have a wonderful life and not notice?
I need to say that I have experiences of appreciation and beauty and gratitude every day, except when I'm thinking about all that I'm not doing and haven't gotten done, which probably...
I'm going to stop you again. I'm going to play it back to you again. So I feel absolutely wonderful, except for when I bite my tongue really hard.
So are you able to guide me in concrete steps? Believe me, I do believe I'm making consistent efforts, and I'll tell you where I most collapse is around my family of origin.
Okay, let's see how simple we can make this, and we might not be able to make it as simple as I want to make it, but let's try.
I'm up for it.
All right, awesome. So, if you woke up with a stomach ache every morning, and you couldn't figure it out, and you couldn't figure it out, and you couldn't figure it out, and the doctors couldn't figure it out, and so one of the doctors said, look, let me just do this. Do a 24-hour video diary. I want to just watch everything that you do in a day and see if I can figure it out that way. And what the doctor sees is that, before bed every night, you drink a quart of cod liver oil. And you just forgot to mention that to him because you've been doing that your whole life because somebody told you it was good for you. Right? The doctor's going to go, oh, I got it. Stop drinking the cod liver oil. And your stomach ache will go away. Right? Does that make sense so far? I'll take it through to the next step, but I just want to make sure you're with me so far.
Yes. Are you telling me just catch myself earlier in the thought process where I'm not doing enough?
Okay. Let's see how simple we can make it. Because you're still trying to give yourself a job to do.
Oh, yes, I am.
Right. And I'm going to say this is not your job. There's nothing for you to do, but there's something for you to see. Like, if you saw that it was the cod liver oil giving you the stomach ache, there's not a big job to not drink cod liver oil. Right? You just don't drink it. So if you start to see the thought-feeling connection for yourself, that your feelings come from your thinking, not from anything else, Thought in the moment creates experience in the moment. And then you'll start to go, wow, I'm starting to feel really little and really small and really less than. I should probably stop thinking whatever I'm thinking. Now, you don't have to replace it with another thought.
Oh.
You can just stop thinking it. Let it go. Drop it in the same way as you do all day long when you have irrelevant thoughts in the midst of conversations and they just pass through. Right? So those kinds of thoughts, which we know we're having because of the kinds of feelings that we're having, they're not messages. They're not important facts that you need to take into account. They're cod liver oil that got into your system for whatever reason. We all have them.
Yeah.
So it's not... Yeah, it's not that you can't get rid of them. It's that you think that there's a reason to keep having them.
Yes. And that's something for me, I can tell I don't fully get the meaning of that, but I feel the power of it. Will you say that, please?
Yeah, I'll say it a little different. And you can always listen back to the show. But imagine that a kid, a young girl, who innocently... for whatever reason, doesn't understand that pain means stop. like that if your hand hurts when you stick it on a stove, that means take your hand off. But somebody tells her, and she believes them for whatever reason, No. That feeling means you've got to push your hand even harder against the stove.
Yes.
Well, she can probably, because human beings are amazing, she can probably learn to do that. And she can probably learn to hold her hand to the stove 24 hours a day if she had to. But it's only because of a misunderstanding of what that feeling means, right? The pain feeling is letting us know, hey, I'm going to give you a little bit of discomfort now so to prevent any sort of longer term damage from carrying on down this route. Well, the thought-feeling connection is exactly the same. When we have uncomfortable, you know, limiting, shrinking, pathetic thinking, that's that feeling is letting us know, you don't want to think that. You don't want to keep going, I'm giving you a little bit of discomfort now so that you don't keep thinking that and create a whole reality out of it that you then have to reckon with.
Yeah, and I have created a whole reality out of it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Learn stuff from, you know, that if you're not...
Absolutely.
You're not working hard enough.
Yeah, so, no. I mean, I get it. I grew up human, too.
Yeah, so I don't... Yeah, and that just melts it all away.
It does. It absolutely does.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
Thank you, Marion.
Yes, thank you, and blessings. Thank you so much.
You bet. I mean, I know for some people, they will have just heard that exchange and go, what just happened? my friend Sarah, she's quite funny. She said to me once that she used to listen to the radio show all the time, and she said, here's my impression of your radio show. The caller comes on and goes, blah, 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 blah. And you say, blah, 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 blah. And they go, oh my God, that changes everything. Well, the reason that changes everything is because we're only ever suffering from one thing, which is thought in the moment that looks real to us, that looks significant to us, that looks like it's more than just thought, that looks like it isn't a transient energy that can move on as soon as we let it. There's a quote I shared last week, and I'm probably going to share it till you're bored of it, but it's one of my favorite Sid Banks quotes now. And it's that everyone is doing the best they can given the thinking they have that looks real to them. Right? All we're ever suffering from is the thinking we have that looks real to us. Because once we start to see that it's thought, it changes all by itself. Right? That's the responsive nature. That's the power of consciousness. Consciousness melts the icebergs of thought back into the liquid, fluid form, and ultimately all the way back to the formless gas, the formless, not yet created energy of creation. And that's one of just the coolest things about being human, is that we have a mind, and that we can align our mind with the divine mind. We have an intellect, and we can align our intellect with the creative intelligence of mind. We have consciousness. In fact, we are consciousness. And we can experience that as a sense of self with a capital S, a sense of who we are at the deepest level. There's a story my friend and I say friend and mentor a lot because it's true. I've been fortunate enough to become friends with many of my mentors, but a woman named Elsie Spittle, and she tells a story about, you know, she knew Sid before and after. She was one of the first teachers of the principles, and she talks about how she was having a complete breakdown. Because what Sid was saying, this idea that life could be reduced down to such simple elements, seemed to her just counter to everything that she'd been taught throughout her life. And so she was kind of having a breakdown in front of Sid and yelling at him and trying to chase him out of her house. And he said, "It's all right, dearie. God is within you, as he is in all of us." And she woke up. She saw it. She saw, oh, thought creates feeling. Oh, I'm not this little person that I think I am. I'm something more, something greater, something awesomer. I guarantee you she did not have the thought something awesomer. That was my little translation to California speak. And that's true for all of us, right? We're all using the same principles to create our life. And when we don't know it, it's kind of a hit and miss thing. But when you start to have access to the hotter, colder game, when you start to realize those uncomfortable feelings are telling you, you don't want to think more like that. You want to kind of colder. And those feelings of peace and love and well-being are letting you know that your thinking is aligned with God's thinking, that your mind is aligned with the divine mind. Warmer, warmer, warmer. And it's 100% reliable, even if what comes from it in your life is 98% unpredictable. So, if you want to learn more about this, it's actually all I talk about. It just doesn't always sound like all I talk about. You can come join us for the Productivity Weekend in LA. You can come join us for a Creativity Weekend in December. You can get involved in any of the programs we do. You can read Inside Out Revolution, Space Within. You can watch the TED Talk, Why Aren't We Awesomer? Or just listen to the show every week. And you'll start to hear how every conversation I have, whether it sounds like it's about creating in the world or entrepreneurship or spirituality or relationships or happiness, is a conversation about the fundamental energy of life and how our understanding of how life works allows us to live a life of ease and grace and beauty and joy, and creativity, and well-being. So, I hope you've enjoyed today's show. I certainly have. I will be back with a new one next week. Check out michaelneal.org for more information. And until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.